Today, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavat Puran, 10th canto, chapter 16, verses 52 to 54. What I'm going to do is read verses 52 and 53. Recite the verses, and then responsively we can involve in verse 54. Anugrinasva Bhagavan Pramnam Strajapitam Naga Strinam Nasa Dusochyanam Piti pranam pradiyatam videhitam kinkaridam anostiyam tavagyagya prachradaya nutustanva muchati sarvado bhavat. Sri, and now it's the 54th verse. Sri Sukha Uvacha. Itan sana kapat nibir Bhagavansa Mabastuta Ruchit Amba Gnisir Asam Visar Sarja Grikut Tanai Sri Sukhuvacha Itansana Gapat Nibir Bhagavansa Mabistute Muchir Amba Gnasir Asam Visar Sarja Grikut Tanai Itansana Gapat Nibir Bhagavansa Nabi Stute Murchit Amba Gnasir Asam Visar Sarja Grikut Tanai. Sri Sukha Vacha Amsana Gitatnibir Bhagavan Sana Birstite Ladies, Anugrinisva, please show mercy. Bhagavan, O Supreme Lord, Pranam, his life heirs, Jajati, his giving up, Panaga, the serpent, Srinam, for woman, Na, us, Sadhusochyanam, who are to be pitied by saintly personalities, Patihi, the husband, Pranaha, life itself, Pradiyatam, should be given back, translation. O Supreme Lord, please be merciful. It is proper for the saintly to feel compassion for women like us. This serpent is about to give up his life. Please give us back our husband, who is our life and soul. Oh, I did that wrong, didn't I? Okay. So, 52 is, O Supreme Lord, please be merciful. It is proper for the saintly to feel compassion for women like us. This serpent is about to give up his life. Please give us back our husband, who is our life and soul. And actually, this is the whole thing. 53 is, now please tell us, your maidservants, what we should do. Certainly anyone who is faithful executes your order is automatically freed from all fear. The purport to this was, the surrender of Kaliya's life was now complete, and Lord Krishna immediately gave them his mercy, as described in the following verses. Sri Sukha Goswami said, thus praised by the Nagapatnis, the Supreme Personality of Godhead released the serpent Kaliya, who had fallen unconscious, his head battered by the striking of the Lord's lotus feet. Purport. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Krishna, upon reaching his decision, immediately jumped down from Kaliya's hoods and stood before the serpent with his wives. We should remember that when Krishna executed these pastimes, he was just a young village boy in Vrindavan. Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Bastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Praskata Dizatarni Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhar Sri Vas Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. This verse 54, it says, his head's battered by the striking of Lord Krishna's feet. In Bhagavad Gita, in the fourth chapter, it is said, Paritranaya sadhanam vinasayacha duskritim, said that the Lord fulfills two purposes when he comes to enact his pastimes. The first point is that he delights his devotees. For this word sadhana in this verse, the devotees, those who do sadhana, Vishwanath Chakravarti said, the devotees' hearts are bursting with joy at the pastimes of the Lord. Vinasaya is destroying, and the word duskritim means the evil-minded. So, asuras, like Kaliya, who are causing mischief, causing trouble, causing anxiety to the devotees, is this an eternal condition? Or are they just temporarily asuras? A dharmic, against the principle of dharmic. As was explained yesterday in some detail, Vedshira was a sage. He upset another sage. The other sage cursed him to become a snake, and so he was born as Kaliya. So, is he actually a Suric? He wasn't in his previous life, he was a sage. Perhaps a not very well-behaved sage, but nevertheless he was a sage. Not a perfect sage, but a sage. So when he become a Naga, when he become one of 1,000 Nagas, they were all brothers, born to Kasyapa Muni by his wife, did he then take Asuric qualities on account of his birth? Is this simply how one becomes an Asura, simply by the circumstances of his birth? In a previous verse to this, verse 35, the Nagapatnis, the wives, they're petitioning Krishna on behalf of their husband. They said, to be touched by the Lord's lotus feet, he must have performed previous austerities. He must surely have been free from pride, a very advanced person, to now get the darshan of the Lord, personal darshan. And he must have been full of respect for others. They said, or perhaps he was very careful in executing devotional service. And they did not reveal his previous existence, but the speaker yesterday described in great detail how he was Vaidshira, he was a sage. So this condition of being a Suric, a Dharmic, is this a perpetual situation? Now the famous examples of this are Jai and Vijay. So they became, the most famous is Hiranyakashipu, then in the next birth Ravan, then Shishupal, and then again they went back to their service to serve Narayan, Lord Vishnu, as the gatekeepers. So this was a temporary situation, and in fact it was the Leela, the sport of the Lord, who condoned the circumstance and the attitude to him that they had to give Krishna some fun, wrestling with a friend. So is the Asuric condition, is it a permanent position? Well, the answer to that very much depends on who you ask. In the Quran, verses 15 to 28, Shaitan is described. And it's described in the Quran that he is eternally evil. We also have the Shaitan in the Greek, and in the English translation he is of course Satan. And Satan is considered to be permanently evil. And this is reflected in religious literature. For example, Paradise Lost by Milton. He's an eternally evil person. So evil, in fact, that he tries to influence innocent, pious people and make them do evil acts. So, in some sense, in the Middle Eastern religions, all of them, it's not really you that's doing something naughty, but really that you've just been tempted by Satan. So, in Vaishnavism, there are many different schools of thought. And I'm thinking of one school of thought in particular who holds that there are eternal damned people, adharmic people. And in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, the whole chapter deals with Devic and Asuric types. And verse 16, it talks about Narake, hell. And verse 19, the word Ajasram, forever, is used when Krishna says these lower class entities, he said, I cast them again and again into the demoniac species. So this word Ajrasam, forever, perpetually, continually, again and again, is used in different places in Srimad Bhagavatam. In the pastimes of Dhruva, Ajamil, Durvasa, and the personified Vesas. The verse in each instance has the same meaning, forever. So, these people, they in Udupi, their understanding of this section, this chapter, and particularly this verse of Bhagavad Gita, is that there are jivas who are eternally condemned. That the sattvic jivas, they can go back to Narayan. That the jivas of a rajasic disposition, they will come again and again and again on this earthly plane. And the tamistic jivas, they will be forever in the lower species or in the lower planets. So, as a devotee, an ISKCON devotee, as they travel in India, as they try to convince individuals that they should step forward and support us, every morning we read the different various donors to the deities. These people have helped us in our preaching mission. And every day there's people who help in various ways. At one point there was no one. We were just young, we were new, we were starting. We went out and we tried to convince people to involve in various programs to help us. And at that point we came across so many different variations of what people were thinking and what they believed in, and they were convinced of it, and they gave different references for why they believed and what they did. It was often very amusing. I remember in Calcutta one time, one devotee, he came back, and he was frustrated, and so much so he went in to see Srila Prabhupada in his room in Calcutta temple. And he said, Srila Prabhupada, he said, I just don't know what to do. Prabhupada said, what is it? He said, I met this nice man, and he's a Vaishnav, he loves Lord Chaitanya. He said, no, that's another story. He said, I met this nice, this man, and I was trying to convince him to become a life member and give a donation for the life membership. And he said that he already follows Krishna, and his guru is an incarnation of Krishna. He said, Prabhupada, how do we deal? Prabhupada said, in Calcutta this is very common. He said, there's an incarnation on every street corner. So, with regard to the souls being cast again and again into the lower species, the devotee came back from the south, came back from Udupi. He didn't know how to what extent, how to deal with this. So, in Prabhupada's darshan in his house, he caught Prabhupada's attention and he asked him, he said, Prabhupada, these people, they say that there's jivas in the different modes and some are, you know. And Prabhupada, he was chanting as he did. He would always give an example of chanting. He would most of the time be chanting. Now and then he would ask a question or make a remark, but he was just getting everyone into the habit of chanting, because this is the Yuga Dharma. This is how we connect with Krishna, through the chanting of the Maha Mantra. So Prabhupada was chanting, he caught his eye, he asked him, and Prabhupada said simply, if this is so, then why do we bother preaching? If a jiva is eternally typecast, if it can't be changed, then why do we preach? So Prabhupada just dismissed this. And Prabhupada's philosophy, Prabhupada's teaching, was very much that we can go back to home, back to Godhead. And I've seen several letters, personal letters, that were sent to several devotees. I can think of three, in which Prabhupada told them, he said, if you follow the regulative principles, if you chant your rounds, he said, you will see Krishna face to face. He said, this is guaranteed. So Prabhupada, he wasn't of the opinion that some will go back, some won't go back. He said, no, everyone can go back. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Adilila, chapter 7, verse 141, Prabhupada makes this very, very crystal clear. And there he said, love of God is dormant in everyone. And if given a chance to hear about the Lord, certainly that love develops. Prabhupada says, our Krishna conscious movement acts on this principle. That what Prabhupada is saying is that prem is dormant within the jiva. Intrinsically, prem is there. It doesn't come from an outside source. It's a part of the jiva's makeup. This is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said. And this is what Jiva Goswami said. However, in Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur employs the poetic device of allergy. He said, demons are the main obstacle facing a person's advancement. And when the demons are killed, this is our progress. So, in each of the different demons, in the pastimes, in the 10th canto, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes a different description of what this represents. So he said that Kaliya is brutal cruelty, maliciousness, pride, envy, and the crookedness of a snake. So, there are those who say that when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was describing, like in Jiva Dharma, this is the theme, that the prem is intrinsic within the jiva, he's saying, some others say that this is a fiction which he devised in order that Western people who have a particular philosophic mindset, owing to their education, owing to their religious systems, owing to their culture and psychology, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur invented this fiction so that they could more easily understand the message of the Bhagavatam. Then they say that Bhaktivedanta Swami, the founder of ISKCON, our teacher, they said he either continued with this fiction without actually telling any of the Western people he was teaching, or he was confused himself. But nevertheless, both Bhaktivedanta Swami and Bhaktivinoda Thakur are not teaching what Jiva Goswami taught about the nature of the soul. And the followers of ISKCON have completely got it wrong, because 100% they trust what Srila Prabhupada is saying. So they're just completely have it wrong about the nature of the soul. Now, people have written books on this. There's a book quite recently being published, how ISKCON's just got it all wrong. Now, there's a young second-generation devotee. His name is Sundar Gopal, and he writes under the name of Simon Haas. He has several books and publication, and presently he's doing a PhD research project under the auspices of very, very prestigious Oxford University in England. And the subject matter of his PhD is the source material, the source scripture of Bhaktivinod and Jiva Goswami. That's his remit, that's what he's studying, and his tutors are pointing him to specific areas in Sanskrit mostly, where he is, where he can get this source material. So Srinivasacharya, he was very prolific in writing, and one song that he wrote was Sad Goswami Astikam. And Srila Prabhupada, he sings this, and when we were young devotees, we learned this. And there's eight verses, but a verse that Prabhupada liked very much was Nana Shastra Vicharanai Kanipano Sadharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarano Tribhuvane Manyo Saranyakaro. This is saying that the six Goswamis, he offers respects to the six Goswamis, and he said they were very expert at scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the good of all human beings. This is the translation. So the six Goswamis, they scrutinized, they studied all of the different scriptures in existence, all the Vaishnav scriptures, all the commentaries, and they came up with these eternal religious principles. So Simon Haas, Sundar Gopal, his research project, his PhD research project, under the auspices of Oxford universities, is to identify what are these revealed scriptures which they identified as holding these eternal principles. Jiva Goswami, his most important philosophical work was Sat Sandarbha. Sat, the word means six, and Sandarbha means weaving, just like you weave a cloth. It means weaving or arranging. And each of the six Sandarbhas opens with a verse in which Jiva Goswami praises Gopal Bhatta Goswami, saying he is simply arranging, weaving, making Sandarbha of the research material that Gopal Bhatta produced. He's simply formatting it. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami was born in Srirangam. When Lord Chaitanya went to Srirangam, here we're pretty much on the edge of the Thar Desert in Rajasthan. We don't get much rain here. Even you can see camels. You see camels pulling loads. It's very dusty, very dry. It's very different in South India. It's tropical. It's very tropical. It's very lush, very tropical. And when it rains, it really rains. One time, I went on some temple business to Udupi, and it was raining. And I checked into the temple Dharamshala, and I thought it was really raining. I'd never seen such heavy rain. And I thought, I'm going to wait until it stops raining before I'm just going to get soaked. And I was there for 3 days. It didn't stop. I thought, it's got to get rain, you know. I didn't have an umbrella. It rains. So Lord Chaitanya, he stayed put for the entire 4 months of the rainy season. And then he was in the house of Venkat Bhatta, Gopal Bhatta's father. and through the talks and so on and so on, he convinced them that worship of Krishna was a higher form, it was more nearer to the jiva's swabhava, his intrinsic nature, than the worship of Narayan, and he became a Krishna worshipper, so much so that he sent his son to Vrindavan, and that's Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who started the worship in the Radharaman temple. So, Gopal Bhatta, he was in the Ramanuj Sampradaya. And there's very many, very great stalwarts of bhakti in the Ramanuj Sampradaya. And Ramanuj Acharya himself was the very first person through Vedanta Sutra to refute the teachings of Shankaracharya. He re-established bhakti, and there's many, many great bhaktas in that line. So Sundar Gopal, through his studies, he has identified the source material from Mahavala Mamigal, Kaviraj, Mahamuni. And he is the person who wrote the material which is identified as being the source material from Jiva Goswami and Gopal Bhatta. So much so that they use identical language, they use identical analogies, they use identical definitions, technical terms. So this is the source material. So A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami follows the teaching of Bhaktivinod Thakur and Jiva Goswami and Gopal Bhatta, who had this information from Mahabala Muni. And so the people who think ISKCON's got it wrong, Bhaktivinod was pretending, he made up a fiction for convenience, Bhaktivinoda Swami probably just went along with it, didn't tell anyone, this is all completely wrong. Because this is an identical line, a straight line to the teachings of Mahavala Muni. So it's even not possible, and I'm just given a few outlines. Sundar Gopal is doing a 6-year study, word for word, verse by verse, argument for argument. So one of the arguments against this, and of course, as I said, someone has just written a book about it. An ex-ISKCON person has just published the book, How ISKCON's Got It All Wrong. And of course he has to defend what he's saying. And he's saying, but Sundar Gopal preempting this, he said it's not even possible that Gopal Bhatta took the entire teachings, the language, the examples, but changed the conclusion. I don't agree with that. It's a different conclusion. This is how it is. The bhakti is not intrinsic, and this is what he was teaching, and this is what Jiva Goswami is teaching, and ISKCON's got it wrong. He said this is not even possible because there was a phenomena going on in South India which is called the cat and the monkey. Markata Kishore Naya. Markata is the monkey. Kishore is the baby, and Nyaya is the system of understanding. So there is a phenomena which they call the cat and the monkey. So Vedanta Desika, he was teaching that we attain the God's grace by activity, by temple programs, by temple worship, by action, we get God's grace. And he was saying that this is like the monkey, because the baby monkey, he has to make an effort and cling to its mother. So you see, even a newborn baby, the mum's jumping and across the buildings, and the little baby's hanging on for dear life, he makes that effort. So he said that effort must be there to attain God's grace. This is Vadakalai school, the northern school, because there's a northern school and a southern school. He was a very, very great acharya in the Ramanuj Sampradaya. There was an Indian stamp in 2019, a 5-rupee stamp published to mark his 750th anniversary. He's a very, very great scholar in the Ramanuj Sampradaya. He spent time in... At one point, he was the leading acharya in Sri Rangam. Sri Rangam is where Gopal Bhatta was born. He was they left it when there was a Muslim invading. The Muslims were repelled. They came back. He actually died in Sri Rangam. So he was there. Gopal Bhatta's family, they're very, very aware of his philosophy, of his opinions. But they went with the cat understanding. So the cat is the tentacle eye, the south one. Marjara Kishore Nyaya. Marjara is a cat. Kishore is the baby cat. Nyaya is a system of understanding. And that was Mahabala Mamigal. He had written in his lifetime 19 major philosophical works. And he argued that it's the grace of God that gives us, that's the mercy. The mercy is purely by the grace of God. It's not something you can earn. No matter what you do, it's a very, very tiny thing as to the size and the potency of God. It's what you do is infinitesimal. That is not going to gain you God's grace. Mostly, we haven't heard of him. I was aware of the cat and the monkey and so on. I didn't know about Mahabala Mahigal until Sundar Gopal, he explained to me, he expressed it to me. I've known him since he was a very small boy. He reminded me that when he was just very tiny, we went on Padyatra together. The Padyatra thing for the centennial had started. And Lokanath Maharaj, he started a Padyatra in England. And we walked from one end of England to the other, mostly through the rain, and it was a difficult time. But he was a little boy, and he reminded me that he said that was his first memory of me. So, Mahamuni Mahagal, he's famous. He's famous in South India. On Amazon, you can buy his murti, you can buy his books, you can buy his pictures. He's a very, very famous personality. And his leaning was more towards the Alvars. Prabhupada quotes very, very profusely King Kulashekar, and he expresses, he analyzes it, he writes about it. He really respects the mood of King Kulashekar, the mood that he has toward Krishna, the love that he's trying to manifest. And there were 12 Alvars. Andal is one of the Alvars, just as in North India, Radharani is considered the topmost devotee. Well, in South India, Andal is considered the topmost devotee, and some say she's actually a manifestation of Radharani. So they were just dealing with pure bhakti, pure love, pure, that is the grace of Krishna. And there is very famous differences of opinion between Vedanta Desika and Mahabala Manigal, so much so that the Sampradaya actually split into two different understandings. And often these two sections, they don't get on together. They each have their temples. Sometimes they're shared processions or shared activities, and they have difficulties about how it should be done. Often there's clashes. These go to the high court. The high court has to say, okay, we're going to do this for half an hour. Then, and they have to sort out some. But they're very, very different opinions. So it's not possible that Gopal Bhatta didn't know about this and didn't know precisely what Mahabala Manigal was saying. There are many different opinions, of course, within Vaishnavism. We have these two opinions here. There's record of 21 commentaries of Vedanta Sutra having been made. So each of them have a slightly different understanding. And Srila Prabhupada, he would carry with him a Bengali Bhagavatam commentary that his Guru Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had made in Bengal, in which there's 10 different commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada would consult these. And often they're slightly different. And in important verses, Prabhupada would say, Ramanujacharya says this, and then Madhvacharya says this, and then Sridhar Swami says. So they're making slightly different points, and often they have very slightly different understandings. One time, I was coming from Calcutta on a train, the overnight train, the sleeper train, and in the morning, once everyone's had their tea and the benches go down, everyone's just sitting opposite each other. I was sitting just very softly, quietly, chanting my rounds. And a person, I was facing the direction the train was going, and a person over to my left, but opposite, nearer the window, he asked me a question. And it was a simple question. I answered his question. He asked another question. I answered his second question. He thought for a time. He answered a third question. I answered his third question. And then, although I was sitting at the end of the bench, I noticed somebody had squeezed in and sat beside me on a tiny space, as they do in India and as they do in second-class sleeper. It's just, if there's a space, it's yours to sit on. I noticed this man, and he was paying attention to what I was saying. I don't know how much of the three questions or the three answers he got, but when he realized the man was finished, he asked the question. And it was a very nice question. It was a nice question. And I thought, oh, and I answered his question. It was a very nice question. I answered it in depth. And then he thought for a moment. He asked a second question, which was also a very clever question. Very clever, very nice question. And I answered that question. He then asked a third question. And I said, but sir, I said, you are a philosopher. He said, yes. He said, I am professor of Sanskrit and Indian philosophy at Delhi University. He said, and you, sir, are a follower of Jiva Goswami. So he had constructed his questions. Well, what does he believe? So different types of Vaishnavas, they split hairs on. He said, you are a follower of Jiva Goswami, which, of course, I am aspiring to be. So, Mahabala Mangal and Jiva Goswami said that prem is an intrinsic quality of the soul. This is a very old debate. What is the nature of the soul? Can we attain it through activity, or is it mercy? Should we get exactly our just deserts for our activity, or are we relying on mercy? Is there justice or is there mercy? So this justice and mercy is a very, very old debate. Plato, in his famous book, The Republic, which is the guidance for Western thoughts and Western government and political systems, he said in that he borrowed from the Varnashram system, he borrowed three of the ashrams. He said he borrowed the Vaishyas, the Kshatriyas, and the Brahmins, and he gave the different qualities under which they should act, and that the state should administer justice to keep harmony between these different groups. His famous disciple Aristotle, he first introduced mercy to the mix, and he said mercy is necessary for justice to exist. And mercy softens the rules. There's volumes and volumes and volumes written about Aristotle, and he's been a great influence in Western philosophical, political, and judicial systems. So much, much can be said. But basically, he said that mercy is necessary. St. Thomas Aquinas was the great Catholic theologist. He was the Christian theologist because the Reformation hadn't happened at that time. He was the great Christian philosopher, and he was saying that in his Theology on Philosophical Principles, is a big book which he has written, he said faith is better than good works. He's relying on mercy. Lord Chaitanya, he had the famous discussion with over Jagai and Madai. Should they be punished, or should the Lord be merciful? Again, this is justice and mercy. Martin Luther, who started the Protestant Reformation, he very much promoted sola gratia, which is God's grace alone. Solo, only God's grace. And sola fide, only by faith alone. So, the Krishna Kaliya, usually Krishna just defeats the demon. But in this case, he was merciful to Kaliya. And this mercy for Kaliya has very far-reaching influences in the way that society has been governed, particularly through the Greek philosophers, Plato, Socrates, was first Socrates, his disciple Plato, his disciple Aristotle. And even it was a very, very common theme. In Shakespeare, he alludes to this in many places. For example, in the Merchant of Venice, in the famous speech by Portia, The Quality of Mercy, Act 4, Scene 1, she said, "Mercy is above the dread and fear of kings. It's enthroned in the heart of kings." And she said, Shakespeare said, "Mercy is an attribute of God Himself." This dance that Krishna did as a very small boy, just not yet going to school, or just about in school in our system, very, very small boy, danced upon Krishna, left his feet marks on his head. It's called Kaliya Mardan, the dance of Krishna. And this is celebrated each year in the month of Shravan, the fifth day of Shravan. It's the rainy season, and because of the rains, many times the snakes come out of their hole. A lot of snakes. As soon as it floods in Mayapur, a lot of snakes all over the place. They need somewhere to shelter. They come up, they go into your attic, into your eaves, into under your slates, into your lot of sleeves. So on this day, the snakes are worshipped on account of this Kaliya, and the snakes are given milk at this time. And all the snakes are worshipped, all the thousand snakes. But Kudra, as was explained yesterday, her husband Kasyapa Muni, and this is also in the Mahabharata, chapter 35 of the Adiparva, it says that the main snakes, Shesha, Ananta, Vasuki, Kaliya, Vasuki is the snake that Shiva wears. They're all worshipped at this time, and by worshipping them, you can bestow good health on your brother in particular, and also your family. There is Krishna Kaliya is celebrated. There's a whole wall which is the carving in Angkor Wat in Cambodia. And there's another temple, Wat Po. It has the Krishna Kaliya carvings on this also. It's translated into the boy who defeated the Dragon King in Japan, in China, it's in Cambodia, it's in this Kaliya Mardan, it's translated into so many languages, Cambodia, Vietnam, into, it's very, very famous pastime. And one of the things that I enjoy most about Kaliya is there was a devotee 200 years ago. His name was Uta Kadu Venkanta Kavi. He had written 400 songs all about Krishna. And he writes a song about Krishna dancing on Kaliya's hoods. It's called Kalinga Nartana Tilana in the Tamil language. Kalinga is what they call Kaliya. Nartana is the dance. And Tilana is a specific musical format. It's usually at the end of a recital. It's a very, very fast beat. They use vocal sounds as well as words and language to more emphasize what is going on. And We have this in the Tal mantra, which you use for playing a musical instrument. So there's one of our devotees here. He did a small YouTube video, and he was hitting the mridanga and expressing the sounds. So he was saying, Tate teri teri ta, ke kayina da, de ga te. And by doing this, so what they do in the tilana, as well as singing, they make sounds. And then this is all to represent, to give you some energy of Krishna dancing, just dancing on this. And it's very, very, and I recommend that you go on YouTube, look it up. Kalinga Nartana. And it's wonderful that this Bhakta, who has written so many songs, he was so inspired by this that he's written a very tabla, and it's, you can really just see Krishna, a little boy, having fun while Kaliya's heads are becoming battered, just completely. it's just, and this delights the devotees. Because, of course, there was some dramatic climax when Krishna jumped in and then the snake wrapped around him, and oh, the devotees are so in anxiety, but then Krishna delights them, and then they're all... So, the entire concept of the mercy of God is why we, especially as Western people, are here. We did not perform any activity which ever would have made us qualify to receive the grace of God. In fact, if we read the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, each verse portrays a person who has been on the cover of Time magazine for being a very exalted person. No one had any dharmic, no one had any saintly qualities. So just as we devotees are here because of the grace of Krishna, because of the mercy that He has given, that gave us the opportunity to associate with a sadhu, to awaken the dormant love of God that's within us. And Srila Prabhupada saying in that quotation I gave from the Adilila 7.141, I think I said, that if a person hears about Krishna, his dormant love can become manifest. And this is the principle that the Krishna conscious movement acts upon. So we, as members of the Krishna conscious movement, who have tasted this prem, tasted this love that we is dormant within us. So just as we are joyful and changed our lives, changed our habit, so that we can focus on this, so too it is our responsibility and is our debt to Srila Prabhupada. He has given us a great gift, a great treasure, and we are in his debt because of this. And the only way that we can repay this debt to Srila Prabhupada is that we give this to others, freely to others, and create a circumstance so that they can hear from an unmotivated person about the glories of the Lord, so they too can allow this love to manifest within their hearts. We have a very nice festival coming up in a few days, a 3-day festival culminating in Ram Naomi on the 10th. I saw in the small newsletter which was sent to me, there's going to be prasad distributed. There's going to be guests come inside. It's the anniversary of the opening of the temple. It's a very, very grand affair. It's a great affair. Prabhupada finally built a temple so the foreign people, so the people in the world, so the Indian people can come and enjoy the most beautiful deities. All of this was done, so it's a big celebration. So, all of us here, we should begin by trying to repay our debt to Srila Prabhupada by engaging in the temple's activities of enticing the pilgrims so they can seriously apply themselves to the process of bhakti, so that the love dormant within their heart becomes manifest. This is our obligation to Srila Prabhupada. This is a way in which we can practically demonstrate our gratitude to this, and knowing that we are under the auspices of Srila Prabhupada, under his protection, under his guidance. And although others who may have different opinions about so many things, others who may have opinions about what is the nature of the soul, what is the nature of the jiva's relationship with Krishna, how can he attain this, how can he attain that, we should know for certain sure that Srila Prabhupada has given us an absolutely bona fide understanding which goes way back in a succession, a shiksha succession, to very, very great devotees like King Kulashekar, who Srila Prabhupada very often quoted. We're very, very fortunate to be here. We're very, very fortunate to be members of ISKCON. We're very, very fortunate to be under the guidance of the Parampara system, Lord Chaitanya, the six Goswamis, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada. And we should try to help others. And that's what the whole temple program is. The book distribution, the kirtan, the classes, the prasad. So we should help. And there's a big occasion coming up in a few days. We shall lend ourselves to this in a spirit of gratitude to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.